are the other 3 kilos, Legrand said in a whisper that was far more menacing than a shout. Where are the other 3 kilos?
I don't know, Segura said. Why don't you ask your partner, Mr. Wells?
Dingo asked him 20 years ago. Wells swore up and down that you were arrested with all 4 kilos.
The paperwork states that the Thai government confiscated 1 kilo. Wells flies back home on his private jet and says, Sorry, Dingo, they took it all. Who do you believe, Mr. Legrand?
I knew Wells was lying, Legrand said. I wanted them all dead. But I was only a lieutenant. Dingo didn't have the balls to kill them. They bought us off with $250,000.
3 kilos for $250,000, Segura said.
They cut it, sold it, and made $1 million at your expense, and mine. Zoe Pound owes you nothing, Legrand said. But I will give you 100 large to walk away from all this.
Why would you give me a nickel if you think you owe me nothing?
Because you're going to do me a favor.
What's that?
Don't kill Wells, Legrand said.
I have to, Segura said. I've waited too long.
You've got your revenge. Save a little for me, and I'll sweeten the deal by another 50,000.
Segura pondered the offer, then nodded slowly. I accept, he said. I can leave the country tonight. Don't do anything till I'm gone.
Agreed, Legrand said.
Once I leave, I can never come back, Segura said. So promise me you won't change your mind.
Have no fear, Romransura, Legrand said. I am not my predecessor.
Segura left the market at 5 in the morning, his backpack stuffed with $100 bills. Then he went back to the hotel on Sumner Place, slept until noon, checked out, and made a surprise visit to his grandmother and his aunts to deliver the $150,000. The next 3 hours were a chaotic hodgepodge of joy, tears, hallelujahs, and Guatemalan food. Before he left, he told his abuela and his tías that there would be no more money coming from his former school friends. From now on, he would send whatever they needed, including tickets to visit him and his family once they'd settled in. By 4:30, he was on Central Park West, watching Carlotta lock the front door to the Wells mansion. And now he was flying across the Atlantic to his new life with Jam and the kids. First stop, Dubai. And then another 12-hour flight to Adelaide. He'd never been there. But after years of hearing Flynn Samuels talk about his hometown, Segura decided it was the best place in the world for a fresh start. He closed his eyes, and just as he had done every night on a cold prison floor, he said a silent prayer, asking God to help him forget the past and dream about the future. And for the first time in 20 years, he fell asleep, knowing his prayers would be answered. Chapter 74. It was Friday night. Morris Langford was in a jail cell on a suicide watch. Yannick Hoffman was out of jail, and no doubt pumping his body full of steroids and crack. Aubrey Davenport was finally reposing at the Frankie Campbell Funeral Chapel on Madison Avenue, her internment scheduled for Sunday. Nathan Hirsch was charged with 3 counts of bribery and 2 counts of stock fraud, and was released on $2 million bail. Instead of a bomb handcuffed to his wrist, he was now under house arrest, a court-ordered electronic bracelet shackled to his ankle. I had no idea where Troy Marchand and Dylan Fremont were, and I didn't give a rat's ass. Princeton Wells had not called Mayor Sykes on Thursday morning as promised, and Captain Cates informed me that if Her Honor had not heard from Mr. Wells by Monday morning, Kylie and I were to pay him another visit. Hopefully by then he and Kenda would be out of the hot tub. Most important, 10 days after Del Fairfax's podium exploded at the Silver Bullet Foundation fundraiser, Geraldo Segura was still at large, and a citywide manhunt for the bomber had been escalated to nationwide. With that much law enforcement on the case, I was resigned to the unhappy fact that Kylie and I would not be the ones to collar him. But at least I could look on the bright side. It was Friday night. A week ago, I'd had to cancel my Friday reservation with Cheryl at Paola's and fly to Bangkok. Tonight, we were finally going to have the dinner date we'd been looking forward to. With one difference. The reservation now said, table for four. How the hell did this happen anyway? I asked Cheryl. We were in a cab on Madison Avenue heading uptown to Paola's.
Wow, she said. That's the tone of voice I'd expect if I ran your new car into a ditch. All I did was agree to have dinner with your partner and her significant other.
Sorry about the tone of voice. It's just that I thought it was only going to be the two of us. And now it isn't.
That's what happens when you stick your cop nose into other people's business. Apparently Shelley got his poker buddies together last night and told them how you and Bob Reitzfeld nailed Rick Button. There's about 300,000 still left from the money he stole. So everyone is getting about 43,000 back. CJ is so grateful, he wants to take us to dinner.
We were already booked for tonight, and we're driving up to Woodstock tomorrow morning for the weekend, I said. We had an ironclad excuse. You could have gotten out of it.
Why would I want to get out of it? Cheryl said. I've heard so much about Kylie's new boyfriend. I'm finally getting the chance to meet him.
Paola's son, Stefano, greeted us at the door and escorted us to our table, where Kylie and CJ were waiting with a bottle of champagne and four glasses. Kylie introduced him to Cheryl. Stefano poured the wine, and CJ made the toast.
To Zach, he said. You, sir, are an outstanding detective.
And he's mighty good at keeping a secret, too, Kylie said. Zach, I didn't know you were working the case.
Reitzfeld asked me to help and to keep it under wraps, I said. I couldn't say no.
Kylie grinned, and I could see she had me cold. Of the 275 recruits in our academy class, Kylie graduated number one. She was more than smart enough to figure out why I never told her I was helping Reitzfeld. And since I graduated number six, I was at least smart enough to know that she knew, and she was now going to bust my balls about it.
So did you suspect Rick Button right from the get-go? She asked, all wide-eyed and innocent.
I was groping for a passable answer when Cheryl came to my rescue.
I hate to be a hard-ass, guys, but Zach and I have a strict rule. No cell phones and no cop talk at the dinner table.
She turned to CJ. You, on the other hand, are encouraged to talk shop. I am totally fascinated with the psychology of being a professional gambler. When did you first know that's what you wanted to do?
CJ answered the question, but Kylie got Cheryl's message. My boyfriend suspected your boyfriend. Get over it. Case closed. After that, the evening turned out to be a lot of fun. Paola fed us well, and Stefano treated us like rock stars. The biggest shocker of the night came just as we were about to order dessert. Danny Corcoran and Tommy Fisher walked through the front door. I told them where I was having dinner, but I hadn't expected them to hunt me down. Stefano pointed to our table, and the two of them headed straight for us.
Sorry to bust in on you, Danny said. I know you guys are off the clock, but there's something we need to tell you before you hear it on the news.
We tried calling, Tommy said, but it just kept going to voicemail.
Cheryl's rules of dinner etiquette claim another two victims.
What's going on? I said. Princeton Wells is dead.
Blown up? Kylie said.
Carved up, Danny said. Haitian style. And in case we couldn't figure out who was behind it, his body was wrapped in a Zoe Pound flag and left in a vacant lot about three blocks from their headquarters.
Do they want us on the scene?
Not now. The 6-7 is all over it, Tommy Fisher said. Wells, being who he is, it may float up to red eventually. But we all know it was Malik Legrand. Proving it is a whole nother kettle of Creole.
We may never be able to prove who killed Princeton Wells, I said. But we sure as hell know who didn't kill him.
Geraldo Segura, Kylie said.
Incredible, I said. After all that, he didn't kill Wells.
Why not? CJ said. I thought he had a major vendetta.
He did, Kylie said. But when you blow someone up with a bomb, they're dead in an instant. After 20 years in a Thai prison, I think Segura wanted Wells to die a long, slow, agonizing death. And nobody does it better than the Haitians.
Excuse me, Cheryl said. But I think it's time we got back to the no-cop-talk-at-dinner rule.
Danny, we were just about to order dessert and coffee. Would you and Tommy like to join us?
Life must go on, Doc,
Danny said, signaling a busboy to bring two more chairs.
And dessert is a great place to start. Let me take a look at that menu.
And then it hit me. With Wells dead, there was no reason for Segura to stay in New York, or in the U.S. for that matter. In fact, since he farmed out the killing, he probably left the country while Wells was still alive. I'd have liked to share my brilliant insight with my fellow detectives, but Cheryl runs a tight dinner table. No cop talk means no cop talk. So I lifted my wine glass and drank a silent toast to Geraldo Segura, the one who got away. This has been a Hachette Audio production of Red Alert, an NYPD Red mystery. Written by James Patterson and Marshall Carr. Read by Eduardo Ballerini. Produced by Cheryl Smith. Directed by Matt Longoria. Recorded by Michelle Medias. Post-production by Beat Street NYC. Red Alert is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by James Patterson. Audio production copyright 2018 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.